This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And when you listen to the Nation of Iran, you can hear a lot of things. There are the voices of the old axis of evil chanting death to America.
Merg bar America!
Today could have been the end of hope on this issue, but now we are starting a new chapter of hope. And let's build on that. Let's consider this everybody's achievement.
Or you can listen for the voices of moderates like Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, who claims he and others want to change Iran's relationship with the U.S. and the rest of the world. In the middle of this U.S. presidential campaign, though, which of the Americans should Iran be listening to?
This Iranian nuclear deal is catastrophic. It is the single greatest national security threat facing America.
Our president has signed a deal with Iran that guarantees that a radical Shia cleric will possess a nuclear weapon and a long-range rocket capable of reaching the United States.
Never, ever, ever in my life have I seen any transaction so incompetently negotiated as our deal with Iran.
You know them by now, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and of course GOP frontrunner Donald Trump. Do they drown out President Obama, who signed the much-maligned nuclear deal with Iran? Iran is in the midst of its own election season. Iranians head to the polls on Friday to vote for members of parliament and the Assembly of Experts, a powerful panel of clerics who will likely choose Iran's next supreme leader. One sign that they are looking backward, the fatwa declared for Muslims to murder author Salman Rushdie for his supposedly blasphemous book, The Satanic Verses. Over the weekend, the state-run media added $600,000 to the already ample bounty for Rushdie's murder. Marco Werman, host of PRI's The World, and reporter Matthew Bell are just back from Iran, and they join me now. Welcome, Marco and Matthew. And which Iran did you find on this trip?
Really, we were only in Tehran. We submitted a visa request just for stories in Tehran and a very specific group of stories. We looked at young people specifically, young people who had been away from Iran and had come back and are doing startup businesses. We met filmmakers. We met musicians. We went to the top of Mount Tochal, which is just outside of Tehran, just on the north side of the city. And we met skiers who go up there on Friday. You know, usually Fridays for Friday prayers in Islam. They, a lot of people in Tehran, surprisingly, do not pray, and found a lot of them up on the top of the mountain on the slopes.
There's a tech community that you discovered. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about it, and we're going to hear from one of the entrepreneurs that you spoke with.
So we met first a woman named Nazanin Danishvar, who's started a kind of a Groupon and a slash delivery service called Takfifan. She's rare in that she's a woman in this business, but she doesn't think that makes her especially special. But a couple of years ago, she had one idea for a startup. Noticing her parents were struggling with groceries, she launched this online delivery service. Started up slowly, and then local media in Tehran did a little article on it, and the thing just exploded. She had 5,000 orders in a day. She had one delivery person. She couldn't handle it. She shut it down, retooled, and went away to Germany, came back, and started this new business, which is kind of Groupon, and now it's also providing kind of a platform to sell stuff as well on the retail market.
And it's the intensity of the business that really matters more than religious issues on the work side, as we can hear.
For example, if you would have come like an hour ago, we had a head of a company that knows that the founder is a female in here. So they all came super religious, and they were not even looking at me while they were talking over the deal, you know. So this is quite normal. So I always take one of our male managers, and he always talks on our behalf, but that way I keep on fixing stuff.
Are they working around the traditionalism in Iran as you saw it?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways they are, you know, and they were surprising just to sit down and talk with about it's to see how similar this was to talk with startup folks, you know, in a place like Boston or Austin, Texas. One thing we asked Nazanin was, what do you say, because she studied abroad, we said, what do you tell other Iranian expats who are interested in maybe coming back to Iran to build a career? And she said, I don't hesitate. I absolutely tell them to come back. In fact, she says, I tell them they have to come back. You know, the country depends on them, and that the older generation is not going to change the country, that it's up to younger people.
And we've talked with many, many artists who are expat artists who left Iran to come to the United States or in Europe, but you found that that's no longer an issue anymore, at least in the same way. You found a lively pop and music community there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a few years ago, I presented a band at South by Southwest in a little showcase I was producing called All Music is World Music, and we had 127 band from Tehran. It was the first band from Iran to play at South by Southwest, and they were working in this very kind of slightly sketchy underground scene where they were rehearsing in these industrial kind of warehouses that were decrepit and in disrepair, or in a greenhouse on the outskirts of Tehran where nobody would find them. But what we found were a couple of bands that are kind of working within the confines and restrictions of the Ministry of Culture, and they are submitting their work and they are getting the green light to perform it. So they're pushing the limits, they're going straight up to the line, and they're saying things that I found kind of surprising. We heard a band called Palette on our last night there, and they were basically playing klezmer music from the Balkans, and the entire auditorium was clapping along. I said, am I not getting something here? You guys are approved by the Ministry of Culture. You're playing klezmer music, which I associate with Jewish culture. And he said, hey, hang on a second. You're leaving out about 95% of the other world that plays klezmer music. So, you know, they're pushing up to the lines. They're even going beyond it.
And here's a band that's rock, southern Iranian style here. This is the leader of the band, Damahi.
You know, Ministry of Guidance in Iran, they really support us to do this project and to make this project happen.
Did they explain why they wanted to support you, why they like you?
I think because we are working on a culture that it might be forgotten for some years ahead, you know?
And that's a far cry from the days of Ayatollah Khomeini back in 1979, when all music tapes were banned and music of any kind was banned.
Absolutely. Yeah, you wouldn't see this kind of stuff on the stage. I mean, and the crowd was totally hip. You know, it could have been a crowd in Boston or New York. And then we get to the front to give our tickets in, and there's like a row of six or eight guys standing there who look like they're, you know, straight from Hamas, or, you know, from the Ayatollah's political party. And I'm like, wait, oh, right. You know, this is Iran, and it's not...
We're in Tehran.
Yeah, it's not... it is not New York City.
Just back from a week in a very, very different Iran, and Iran in the midst of change and really rethinking its relationships with the United States as well as the rest of the world, as we do the same here in this very raucous political campaign where Iran is very much a subject. Marco Werman, host of PRI's The World, and Matthew Bell, reporter with PRI's The World. Before we go, gentlemen, any thoughts about Donald Trump on the streets of Tehran?
Great question.
Donald Trump, yeah. I mean, one thing, it's a trip to see, you know, statements from Donald Trump and Ted Cruz on the front page of a newspaper like one that's called Kayhan, which is a longtime supporter of the regime. You know, and they would grab things like Ted Cruz saying that he'll rip up the nuclear deal. And there it is on the front page. And it's just sort of, you know, highlighting some of the wackier aspects of American politics. And Donald Trump came up. Several people brought up, what is going on with Donald Trump? And
is he a legitimate candidate?
Yeah, it just unprompted, you know, frankly. And we would say, well, wow, he sure is entertaining, isn't he? But he's probably not going to get elected. And three different people said, yeah, that's what we said about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the hardline president that got elected in 2005. And especially in Tehran, too, you know, people, it's just a very cosmopolitan place. I haven't been to other parts of Iran, but just suspect that it's very different from the kind of conservative heartland where the regime supporters, many of the regime supporters, come from.
Well, I can hear that you felt quite at home there in Tehran.
Ready to go back
Absolutely.
Tomorrow, John.
Matthew Bell and Marco Werman, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Marco Werman, host of PRI's The World and reporter with The World, Matthew Bell, both visited Iran and have just returned.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.